The Elliott State Forest in Oregon will continue to be a publicly held forest. The state land board recently made that decision. The land board consists of governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, and it was that last position that made the difference. Tobias Reed has only been treasurer since the beginning of the year. He won election last fall after 10 years in the state house. Former treasurer Ted Wheeler ran for mayor of Portland and won. Between the Elliott State Forest and the retirement program called Oregon Saves and, oh yeah, managing billions of public dollars, treasurer is a fairly busy job. Here's our chance to catch up with Tobias Reed. Thanks for joining us today in The Exchange.
Thank you.
So let's deal with the Elliott first. There was a bit of a transformation in your position on this over time. Can you tell us what happened?
Well, I've always been a fan of public ownership, but what has been particularly challenging is the legal and constitutional structure that's at the heart of the Elliott, and that I think is what's created so much tension. On the one hand, the Elliott is part of the Common School Fund, and as a result, it has an obligation, a constitutional obligation, to generate returns for the Common School Fund and the school kids of Oregon. On the other hand, we care about the forest and a lot of the things that happen there. So as fiduciaries and as members of the state land board, we're obligated to generate those returns. So I didn't feel like we had a viable alternative to the proposal made by Lone Rock and the tribes that was presented in February. And I didn't feel like we could reject that plan without a viable alternative. In the months since then, I've been working very hard to create an alternative structure. And I'm happy that in the meeting just a couple of weeks ago, we were able to move in that direction. So I think we're now on a path that helps to resolve that tension in a way that can stick.
So, Mr. Treasurer, what are the details of the plan then? I mean, what are some of the things that can happen now to take some of the fundraising pressure off of the Elliott State Forest or make money again?
Sure. So the path really revolves around three things. The first is seeking some bonding authority from the state legislature. The governor has talked about $100 million that would ensure protection of some of the critical areas within the Elliott. That could be looked at as sort of a down payment in a sense. The second is the completion of a habitat conservation plan that involves working with the federal government and a number of different agencies to establish kind of the rules of what can happen inside the forest and balance the protections that we want to ensure for critical habitats there. And the third is the piece that I worked really hard on, which is to have Oregon State University explore the possibility of acquiring the rest of the forest and use it as a research forest along with the other forests that they have in their possession. So hopefully we'll get to a place where we can really break that tension between the Common School Fund and all the other things we care about. And I just really am excited about that possibility that, you know, a few years down the road, this might be an Oregon State University forest that maintains public access and all the other things we care about, and at the same time contributes to the future of the economy, the future of the state, the future foresters in a way we can all be excited about.
So the bonding authority, $100 million in bonds, how would that be repaid? Would that be from some taxpayer fund?
It would. There are a number of different types of bonds that are available to the legislature, and that's a decision that the legislature would make. But in general, yes, it would be from tax revenues. And there is, this is an important point. I've had a lot of people ask me, why would we bond to buy something that we already own? And that's really at the heart of the matter, because we, being the public, don't own the Elliott Forest. It's owned by the Common School Fund, which is a trust fund. And so it's not a state asset. And that really trips a lot of people up, because it's not a state asset. It's the asset of the Common School Fund, the beneficiaries being the school kids of Oregon.
So worthwhile sidetrack here then. I mean, how important is the Common School Fund to schools in Oregon? I mean, is it a big chunk of what ends up in schools or a small percentage or what?
It's relatively small. The total assets of the Common School Fund are around $1.5 billion, and it's managed as an endowment, which is to say that we use the returns that are earned by that Common School Fund to support schools. So it's not a large percentage as compared to the total level of state support for schools. But that's not the important part, of course. The important part is the constitutional obligation to use it in that way. And that's what's given rise to a lot of the difficulty with respect to the Elliott. So we're hopeful that we're going to be able to resolve that in the next few years in a way that does not put a future land board in the same sort of bind.
Well, I know the Oregon School Board Association threatened a lawsuit. Lone Rock Timber says it should get a few million dollars for its trouble because it went to the trouble with the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians of preparing a a bid for roughly $220 million. Are you concerned about any litigation here?
Well, I feel badly about how that has all transpired. I mean, it's important to remember that that the tribe and Lone Rock did not seek or advocate for a sale when the previous land board, more than 2 years ago, made the decision that a sale was the best option. It was only then that Lone Rock and the tribe put together a proposal, and they did a lot of work to do that. I think they are among the few groups who acted consistently and honorably. They tried to deal with some odd and changing circumstances in responding to that bid. So I do feel badly about how that has all transpired for them. We'll see how it transpires. I'm hopeful that we will be able to avoid the expense and effort of litigation.
I'm curious to know, Tobias Reed, by the way, is the Oregon State Treasurer and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a conversation you can join at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Just curious to know about the volume of contact you got when the land board was still considering a sale of the Elliott State, a portion of the Elliott State Forest. Did you get tons of emails, phone calls, letters, et cetera?
Well, of course, and I respect and appreciate that. That's one of the nice things about our system and about Oregon in particular, that people are accessible and that we can hear people's concerns. I really took that seriously, but I also have to take my oath and my obligation as a fiduciary responsibly and seriously. That's why we really worked hard to try to come up with an alternative structure that meets our fiduciary obligations and respects the concerns of people around public ownership.
So there's still work left to do. What else has to happen now? And in the interim, what happens to any funding that would have gone to the Common School Fund?
So that's what is particularly important about the bonding authority, and that remains as the current legislative session moves towards a close. The legislature has the task of creating a budget, among which is how to use the bonding authority that's available. So those who care about this should be in contact with their legislators and urge them to support the use of bonding authority for this purpose. We're able to do that. The governor's office is working with our federal partners to advance the habitat conservation plan. Meanwhile, the memorandum of understanding that we concluded with Oregon State University has a number of steps that they need to see before they're able to proceed with a sale. So all of these things, I think, can be sort of summarized in by saying that we've got work to do to develop the steps that are outlined, but we've got a path to a lasting resolution.
The habitat conservation plan you mentioned a couple of times, that doesn't involve any income to the state or to the Common School Fund, does it?
No, it doesn't. What it basically does, and this is an area where I'm a lot less expert than the bonding and the OSU piece of it. It essentially would represent an agreement with the federal government that would allow for greater confidence about what could take place within the forest without running afoul of required protections for critical or threatened species, essentially a way to agree on the rules of conduct that would allow greater confidence about what can happen there.
So, Treasurer Reed, you mentioned the legislature a moment ago, and I'm curious to know what the difference in perspective is. I mean, after 10 years in the House, you obviously knew what the state budget looked like, knew what the dollars mm-hmm. were, all that stuff. I just wonder how different the perspective is when you have to manage all the stuff up there.
You know, I've said for a while that my experience in the legislature was sometimes a bit like being a college student, that the committees that we're on sort of like classes, and eventually a person has to declare a legislative major. If I continue that comparison, I feel like being treasurer now is maybe like going to graduate school. If the legislature was a good undergraduate experience, now I'm a little bit narrower and deeper. I don't have the same kind of standing or platform on the same wide range of issues, but I can get much deeper on individual things, and we're able to focus. And what I really like about the job is it gives us the ability to think long term in a way that a lot of other places don't. We're a large investor as a state. $94 billion is our portfolio at the moment. And we're one of the few large investors that has not only the opportunity, but really the responsibility to think not just about the next quarter or the next year, but decades and generations into the future. And that gives us the chance to exert our influence as investors. And the really exciting part is that the longer out into the future we think, the more our fiduciary obligations merge with those things that we hold as values. One great example of that relates to diversity. It turns out that companies who have boards and leadership teams that are diverse actually perform better financially. So not only is it the right thing to do, it's how we make money for the state. So being able to make those arguments and advance those causes is a really great thing.
Tobias Reed is the treasurer of the state of Oregon and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us as we talk about issues that affect the Treasury, including the Oregon Saves Program we'll be talking about in just a moment. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. When you said $94 billion for the state portfolio, my eyes got a little bigger, and I'm around the numbers a fair amount. I'm sure some people might be thinking after hearing that figure, why doesn't the state just liquidate some assets, pay down the PERS shortfall, and get on with a decent budget?
Well, that's just it. Much like we've been talking about the Common School Fund not being state assets, about $72 billion of that $94 is in the Public Employee Retirement Fund, which is not actually state money. That's the money that is used to pay retirement benefits earned by public employees. So we hold that in trust, and we do our work to invest that and to manage it and try to make it grow. But it's not state money. So that amount is actually what contributes to the PERS system.
All right, so it's the money from the state and the cities and the counties and everybody involved in the PERS system?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so while we're talking about retirement, then let's move on to Oregon Saves, the idea of setting up a retirement plan for people who might not otherwise have one. I mean, how long has this been in the works?
A long time. The legislature did some really important things even a couple of decades ago, starting with a report. Unfortunately, they documented years ago the problem, and like many reports, it sort of sat on the shelf. But starting in 2013, the legislature created another task force, looked again at this problem that about 1 million people in Oregon, almost half of those who are working, don't have access to a retirement plan at work. So the task force thought about options and developed some recommendations. And in 2015, we passed legislation that creates what's now known as Oregon Saves. And the way this works is essentially an opt-out IRA for people who don't have access at work. So if you are an employer who doesn't offer a retirement plan to your employees, your obligation is going to be to enroll your employees in Oregon Saves. And what that means is that unless the employee tells you otherwise, which they're certainly capable of doing, you will deduct 5% of their wages and send it off into their IRA. This is a portable IRA. It follows people from job to job. It's their money. It is not PERS. There is no obligation or guarantee on the part of the state or the employer or anything else. And all of this adds up to be something really important, because when people have access to a plan at work, about 70% of people participate at some level. But you got to go out and get your own IRA. Only about 4.5% of people do that. So we're trying to make it easier for people to do what's in their own best interest. And I think years from now, this might be something that we're very proud of as a state, because people will have the chance to accumulate assets as they go through their working life, and as they get closer to and enter retirement, they'll have some of their own assets to draw on, and that's something we all have a stake in.
Why is it set up as an opt-out instead of an opt-in? In other words, you have to tell your employer, I don't want to do this, otherwise it takes effect.
That's right. You know, I think as humans, we all tend to put off those things that seem far off, that seem complicated and difficult. What we're really trying to do is to turn inertia into an ally here. It's just well documented and supported by research and direct experience that people don't take the step necessarily if they have to initiate themselves. But if we're able to say, look, we're going to put you into this plan unless you tell us otherwise. It's the standard election is going to be a target date fund, which means that it gets more conservative the closer one gets to retirement. This is what's in people's own best interest. And we're certainly open to people making other choices. But in the absence of that, we want to make it easier for people to do what's in their own best interest.
So it's interesting, the target date stuff, because then the older you are, essentially, the more conservative the investments get, less risk taken in the interests of more steady income.
That's right.
And it's set up for a rolling introduction. I want to get to the Congress stuff in just a second. It's set up for a rolling introduction. What is supposed to happen later this year?
So in July, we will start with the first version of our pilot program. We'll have about 12 employers and about 200 employees to make sure that the technology is smooth and the information sharing is good. We've had our first employer last week do the registration and the quote from this employer that we liked very much was, well, that was pretty painless. depending on how we proceed there, what we learn, we'll implement some slight revisions with a second pilot that's about 40 employers and 2,000 employees. We'll have one more roll at that, and then later on towards the end of the year, we'll start rolling it out to other employers, starting with large employers first.
So at this point, there's no requirement for any employer to offer a retirement plan?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. They can choose to do so, and if they do, we've had actually a few employers who learned about our program and decided instead to offer a retirement plan of their own, and that's perfectly fine. I consider that a policy win. The point for us is to make sure that people who are working in Oregon have a chance to save for retirement, and however that happens, I'm fine with it. We want to make sure that people have that access, and whether it's part of Oregon Saves or another plan, that's fine with me.
All right, California has a similar program it's working on called California Secure Choice. So California Secure Choice and Oregon Saves, similar kinds of programs to give retirement accounts to people who don't have them or don't have access to them. So, but then, of course, here is the hammer now waiting in the wings just off stage, which is Congress trying to kill programs like this. Any idea why?
I'm very disappointed by it and a little bit mystified because, you know, even if you are a conservative Republican who believes in small government, I think this is a program you should like because what we're really doing is giving people a chance to save their own money. And when they have assets, that means less of a demand on our social safety net programs and budgets in future years. I could put forth a bunch of different theories about why the congressional act happened, but we're not too concerned about that because when we created this this program, the rule that Congress worked so hard in recent weeks to repeal didn't exist. So we built it without that confidence. We think we're on good ground and are going to be able to proceed without difficulty.
Tobias Reed is the treasurer of the state of Oregon. We're talking about the Oregon Saves program and the similar California Secure Choice program and the congressional opposition to those. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Does it help a bit politically in Washington that California is trying to set up a system at the same time?
It does, and it's not just California. Illinois is also on a similar path, and a number of other states at various stages following a similar path to what we did with a task force and legislation and so on. But we talk regularly with our colleagues in Illinois and California. We, in some ways, we're part of a coalition here. We were the third to pass legislation. And I think, frankly, we learned from the experience that California and Illinois had. So I like our legislation. Part of that is reflected by the speed with which we've been able to move towards implementation.
Treasurer Reed, you mentioned this would go into an IRA, an individual retirement account. Where physically held? Where would that reside? Where would the account be?
So the legislation created a board which has been making the decisions. I joined the board as a member of the House, and then when I became treasurer, I became the chair of the board. What we've been doing is designing the elements of the program and dealing with contracts. So State Street Global Advisors is going to be the custodian who invests the money in those. There'll be three basic options. The target date that we already talked about gets more conservative as people get closer to retirement. A growth fund that will be a passive index fund, broad base, and a capital preservation fund, which essentially takes minimal risk and focuses on security. So those are the three choices. It is not an exotic or It's very basic, frankly, and those will be run by State Street.
Will State Street take any money off of this? Any fees or any other operating costs?
Yes, all of these the program will be paid for by participants' fees, but we've worked very hard to keep those fees very low, and that's frankly one of the other advantages for participants, because by being part of a larger pool, not only have access to professional management that adheres to the fiduciary rule and acts in participants' best interest, but we'll be able to minimize those fees. And at this point, we're confident we'll be able to keep those under 1% all in.
So is this rolled in with any public entities like PERS or the Oregon Savings Growth Plan, or in any way affected by the Oregon Investment Council?
No, the Oregon Investment Council makes decisions about that portfolio that we already talked about. This Oregon Saves is run by a different board, and the money will be invested by State Street. We'll have a contract with them. The board could make those changes to that, but they're not. It's not connected to the Oregon Investment Council.
Okay, and I notice it starts with a Roth IRA. No offering for a traditional IRA up front.
Not presently. There are a lot of different things that we want to consider adding as we get the program up and running. Going to a traditional IRA is among those. The reason we went with the Roth IRA, twofold. One, it's likely that a lot of the people who are going to participate in this program are eligible for the Roth. We want to make sure that it's possible for people to access those dollars in an emergency without penalty. We do think that down the road we will likely add a traditional IRA as an option, but the default will probably remain a Roth.
All right, so they'll be taxed on that as income going in instead of coming
right.
out like with a traditional IRA. Got it. Okay.
Exactly right.
So California is talking about pushing ahead with California Secure Choice. No matter what happens with Congress, is Oregon prepared to take that stand?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so Oregon Saves will start a pilot program July 1st, is it?
That's right. With the small number of employers who have volunteered to comply early, we're really encouraged by the range and diversity in that group. We've got machine shop. We've got a brewery. We've got a chocolatier. We've got nonprofits. We've got people all over the state in all kinds of different industries and sizes who are going to be part of this. So we'll learn from their experience and then apply that as it goes much wider.
Okay. Oregon Saves, a retirement savings program for people who don't have such plans available through work, starting up in a minimal fashion July 1st with more rollouts later on. Tobias Reed is the State Treasurer of Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
My pleasure. Thanks for the time.
You bet.